Welcome to the Daily Platform, sponsored by Bob Jones University. Following a hymn sung by the student body, BJU President Steve Pettit begins a discipleship series entitled Encountering God from the Book of Psalms.
This morning, as we begin our series on Encountering God, a study in the Psalms, I want to make sure that all of you did get our book that has been published. This is free to you, and it is for your own personal benefit. I would encourage you to bring the book to chapel and make it a part of your study, because many of the notes that I'm going to be giving in my sermons are actually in the book itself. And also, you can keep the notes from chapel right here and have them with you all of the time. So I'd encourage you to do that. In your estimation, what do you think is ranked the most popular book in all the Bible to read? There are 66 books. What's number one? Well, if your answer is the Psalms, then your answer is correct. Because the Psalms are consistently ranked the number one book that people go to read when they have time to read Scripture. So the question this morning is why? What is it that makes the Psalms so appealing to the people of God? Why is it that God's people turn to these chapters so consistently? In the autobiography of the early church father Augustine entitled Confessions, he quotes the Psalms on nearly every page. Why? Because Augustine saw that when he was saved, the Psalms were central to the reorientation of his life towards God. That is, in the reading of the Psalms, he was constantly orienting his life spiritually and morally. He spoke of being set on fire when he read the Psalms. And most importantly, he viewed a psalm as the story of his own soul. It's like he's reading his own life in these Psalms. It's as if God is telling the story of Augustine's own heart. And that's why You and I are so connected to the Psalms. One writer, Trimper Longman, writes, "The Psalms appeals to the whole person. It informs our intellect, it arouses our emotions, it directs our wills, and it stimulates our imaginations. When we read the Psalms with faith, we come away changed. It is through the Psalms that we have life-changing encounters with God." And that's our hope this semester, that as you get into the Psalms, that you will not only see yourself, but you will see your God and the connection to both. So here's a question I'd like to ask. Have you ever felt like you encountered God when you read the Psalms? In 1982, I was a youth pastor in Saginaw, Michigan area. We took our seniors from our Christian school down to the wilds for the annual senior trip. Early one morning, I got up and went up to a room there in the Lodge of the Wilds to have my morning devotions. At the same time, I was personally having a real struggle in my ministry, and it wasn't the ministry that was the problem. It was the fact that I was struggling financially. I was living on youth pastor wages. When I started in the youth ministry, I made $250 a week. That's a little over $10,000 a year. When I started in the ministry, I felt like tithing is just kind of the lowest level of giving to God, because if you don't tithe, you're a thief. So I was like one step above a thief. So I always gave 20% back to God. So I was giving $50 out of our $200 paycheck back, out of $250 paycheck back to the church, and we were living on $200 a week. Well, into our second year, we started a building program called Together We Build. And of course, as a staff member, I'm responsible to give, so I decided to give another of tithe to the building program. So we changed the name personally from Together We Grow to Together We Die, because I was living on $175 a week. I gave my wife $35 a week for food. We had to buy all kinds of stuff, and so it was extremely tight. I was driving an old Baptist beater car, you know, basic youth pastor car. And it was okay for a short period of time, but after a couple of years, it got really, really old. We barely had enough money to buy even any furniture for our house, and for a while, we had almost hardly any furniture in our living room. And so over a process of time, I got irritated. And I remember going down to the wilds, kind of carrying this irritation with me. And I went up to that room that morning, and my Bible reading was through Psalms. And I came to Psalm 73, and I had a revival. Because in it, the writer, a guy named Asaph, says that he almost fell away from God because he became envious at the foolish because of the prosperity of the wicked. Because I had a business degree from college, I have a lot of my friends that were already in business and they were making good salaries, buying homes, driving nice cars, and here I was having hardly anything. And I found myself becoming envious. And all of a sudden, it was confrontation. And he goes down and he talks about all that the wicked get, and it seems like they have so much, they're prosperous, and then the righteous have so little, and then God chastens them. And that's sort of the process of the psalm until you get closer to the end. And then it says he was foolish and he almost fell away from God until he went into the house of God and he understood therein. That is the end of the wicked. And then he began to realize, of course, he was foolish. He began to see what he had in God and his eternal destiny with the Lord and his fellowship with God. And you come to the end of the psalm and it says, "Whom do I have in heaven but thee? And there's none upon earth I desire besides thee. Though my heart, my strength faileth, God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever." And I remember reading that psalm and there meeting with God and coming to resolution that God is my strength and he is my portion and he is enough for me. A God encounter with the Psalms. What happens when we encounter God in the Psalms? When Moses encountered God speaking out of a burning bush in the Sinai desert, what did he do? The scripture says that he takes off his shoes and he reverently worships God. The Psalms were written so that we could hear God's voice directly and worship God reverently. One writer says the Psalms illuminates the mind for the purpose of enkindling the soul, indeed to put it on fire. It may indeed be said that the purpose of the Psalms is to turn the soul into a burning bush. Are you on fire for God? Have you had God literally stir your soul? Perhaps no one understood this better than David. He was the primary author of 50% of the Psalms. Samuel described David in a way that I think summarizes David's experience of encountering God. For Samuel says that David was a man after God's own heart. When you encounter God, you pursue him. David had multiple personal encounters with God, and he expressed them in the Psalms. Dr. Les Olala, who will be speaking here in our Bible conference, calls these encounters getting on the I am level with God. That means to be real and honest with who you are, where you are in the light of who God is. And when David encountered God on that level, he responded to God in humble dependence and obedience. So here's my hope for this semester, that you will personally have encounters with God on that I am level as we study the Psalms, and hopefully you'll take off your shoes and you'll worship God. So this morning I'd like to just begin with, as we start this journey of encountering God through the Psalms, I'd like to start with just some basic overall important elements of the book of Psalms, because obviously there are 150 chapters. We're not going to study them all. We're going to look at 10 select Psalms. But what are some basic overall things about the Psalms? Number one, first of all, let me begin with its special features. I think we all know that Psalms is the largest book in the Bible. It has 150 chapters and 2,461 verses. What's the longest chapter in the Bible? In the Bible and in the Psalms. What is it? Psalm 119. It's a challenging one to memorize, by the way. What's the shortest Psalm? Psalm 117. It's only two verses. Psalm 117 is the middle chapter of the Bible, the center of the 1,189 chapters in the Bible. Psalm 118, verse 8, is the center of the over 31,000 verses contained in the scripture. It's the middle verse of the Bible. Psalms is written by more authors than any other book in the Bible. I mentioned it earlier, but David is the chief author of the Psalms. He's written 75 of the 150 Psalms. Psalms took the longest time to write. It was over a period of somewhere between 900 and 1,000 years, dating all the way back to Moses, who wrote Psalm 90, all the way forward to Psalm 126, that was written after the Babylonian exile. I think this is important. Psalms is the most quoted Old Testament book in the New Testament. Of the 360 Old Testament quotations and allusions in the New Testament, 112 of them are from the Psalms. The Psalms mentions more about Jesus than any other book in the Old Testament. And I think one of the most important things about the Psalms is that when it was written, the Psalms was the Jewish hymn book. So when we look at Psalms, what we're looking at is we're actually looking at a hymnal. So it was intended to be sung by the Jewish people. So that's the special features. The second thing is actually the style of the Psalms. Psalms are Hebrew poetry. Now, when we write poetry, we write it primarily with rhyme and meter, okay? So everything has to rhyme together. Hebrew poetry is quite different. It's written more with parallel thoughts. So when you read the Psalms, you read it like in a with two lines, and the first line and the second line parallel each other. So I want you to take and turn to Psalm 6, if you will, Psalm 6. And I want you to see some of the parallelism, because the most common parallelism is what we call synonymous. That is, the second line is essentially saying what the first line says, just slightly different. The second one is antithetic, which is the opposite. So the second line will say the opposite of the first line. And then the synthetic is more, the second line builds on the first line. So as we look at Psalm 6, very short, 10 verses, as I read through it, just which one is it? Which kind of parallelism is it? Verse 1, O Lord, rebuke me not in thine anger, neither chasten me in thy hot displeasure. That's synonymous. Have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am weak. O Lord, heal me, for my bones are vexed. Okay, what is he doing? He's saying basically the same idea, just expanded a little bit. My soul is also sore vexed, but thou, O Lord, how long? That's the opposite. It's almost, there it's antithetic. Verse 4, return, O Lord, deliver my soul. O save me for thy mercy's sake. That's a prayer that's synonymous. Verse 5, for in death there's no remembrance of thee, in the grave who shall give thee thanks? Again, synonymous. Verse 6, I'm weary with my groaning. All the night make I my bed to swim. I water my couch with my tears. That's called synthetic. It's building on and more climactic. Verse 7, mine eye is consumed because of grief. It waxeth old because of all mine enemies. Again, that's synonymous. So I'll stop there. You can read more if you will. The idea is when you're reading it, the second line is parallel with the first line. Then also the Psalms were written in such a way to create imagination. So there are many colorful pictures in the Psalms. Let's take Psalm 23, probably the easiest one. What are the colorful words that are expressed in Psalm 23 that give us images? The Lord is my what? He makes me lie down in. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the what? Yeah, you got pictures. You anoint my head with oil. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. All of these are word pictures. And what does that teach us? It teaches about the Hebrew mind and his attitude towards God. For example, in that time frame, there's the Greek world and there's the Hebrew world. And there was a Greek mindset and Hebrew mindset. So if I were to ask you, so which kind of mindset do you have about God? If I were to ask you today, what is God like? You would say, God is what? Say it. Say something. Say something. Yeah, God's holy. God's what? Good. God's what? Great. God's merciful. God's righteous. God's just. Okay? So if that's the way you think about God, it's very clear that you have a Greek mindset. Because you actually see God more in concepts. Ideas. But if you were to ask a Jew, what's God like? He would say, well, God's like a rock. God's like a shepherd. God's like a strong tower. Because they thought more in word pictures. There were more images. And when you have a picture, you have an image, what does it affect? It affects both your thoughts and it affects your emotions. Included in the styles of the Psalms are various types of Psalms. These are different, and when you read the Psalms, you see that. And so there are differing opinions on how many genres of Psalms there are, but I've taken the seven different types of Psalms in the book by Tremper Longman in his book on how to read the Psalms. And so there are seven of them. There's wisdom Psalms. That is Psalms that point to how to live a godly life. We're going to look at one of those, Psalm 1. Then there's Psalms of Lament. Almost a third of the Psalms are Psalms of Lament. That's basically meaning that life is hard, my situation stinks, my life is difficult, but God, you're still good. Imagine, almost a third of the Psalms are Psalms of Lament. And so we're going to look at two of those, Psalm 51 and Psalm 90. Then there's royal psalms. These are psalms that speak of the prophecy of the coming of Christ. We're not going to be able to take time to look at one of those, but one of the most famous are Psalm 110. Then there are hymn psalms, psalms of praise to God. We're going to look at Psalm 100. There are thanksgiving psalms that express gratitude to God for his blessings. And we're going to look at three of those, Psalm 19, 139, and 150. There's psalms of remembrance that speak of the history of the Jewish people and what God did through their history, because history is his story. And then finally, confidence psalms, psalms that acknowledge trusting and relying in God to protect us, to provide for us, to give us his power and peace. We're going to look at two of those, Psalm 23 and Psalm 121. And then the third area I just want to say a few words about are the superscriptions of the Psalms. And you see those, that is little titles written underneath the Psalms. There are 116 Psalms that have a variety of titles, headings, and notations added in its beginning for various reasons. For one, it may identify the author. Secondly, it may establish the circumstance in which it was written. This was going on at this time, so you can go back and read about it in the Old Testament. Or it may explain how it should be sung or played on a variety of musical instruments. What's interesting to me is that we have the Psalms and we have the lyrics, but we really don't have any tunes. There are no, if I could say it this way, God-ordained specific tunes. They were to write those tunes out. But they were to be sung by using particular instruments. These superscriptions were included to assist the worship leader in the congregation as to how the Psalms were to be sung. These superscriptions were preserved, and therefore we should consider them as a part of the author's original composition. Perhaps the most famous superscription is one we see all the time, and it's the word Selah, S-E-L-A-H. It's found 71 times in the psalm. You've probably seen that. The meaning is debatable. Some believe it's a change of musical accompaniment. Some believe it's like time for an interlude, like we would say taking a break in the song. Some think it's a notice to begin a new section, so the sections are divided by the selahs. Most people think it's a cause to pause and to reflect, or simply to take time to meditate and think about it. So the question then as we finish this morning is this: how do we encounter God through the Psalms personally on a daily basis? And three very simple and practical things we need to do. Number one, we need to study and meditate on the Psalms. Meditation is the act of thinking the scripture over and over and over. This begins by reading, but it also means that you need to take time and write down your observations. What do we call this? We call this journaling. I started journaling before that was even a popular word. And that is, you read the scriptures and at the same time you write your thoughts down. It's very difficult to read the Bible without engaging your mind because your mind wanders. You read a whole chapter and you don't remember anything you read. So what do? You take your pen, you take your paper, or you use your computer and you start typing out your thoughts and your ideas. That's called meditation, reading it, observing it, and journaling. You can make a biography of God. Look at how God reveals himself in each psalm. Focus your attention on what God is like and what he has stated about his own character. One writer said that Augustine spent an hour of every day for several decades meditating on the book of Psalms, verse by verse. In this fashion, he put into writing his reflection on the Psalms. So practically, you could read a psalm a day. If you read one psalm a day, you'll read through the book of Psalms twice a year. You can read through five psalms a day. That's not hard to do generally. And you can go through the entire psalms in a month. You can study the psalm of your year. That's what I do. So every year I have my birthday. When I get a new birthday, I get a new psalm. So this year my psalm was Psalm 39. So it's been a great year as I've been studying the word. So I'd encourage you to do that. So study the psalms. Number two, pray the psalms. And I would really want to really emphasize this. Let the book of Psalms be your prayer guide. It was in itself, it's a series of prayers. The meaning of the Hebrew name for Psalms is praise. Then this is what we should be doing when we use them. So you can take the Psalms, instead of trying to pray your own thoughts, meditate on the Psalms, and then turn it in prayer back to God. So today, that's what I did, because today is the 15th of the month. And so I prayed through Psalm 15 this morning. And when you do that, you meditate on the scripture, and it does something to your heart and your soul. So pray the Psalms. And then finally, sing the Psalms. The Psalms were both the Jewish prayer book and the Jewish song book. And when you sing, you get emotionally engaged in the truth. The truth comes alive. And I would encourage you, for example, Psalm 25, verse 1, it's a psalm that at least we used to sing when I was a youth pastor. Unto thee, O Lord, do I lift up my soul. Unto thee, O Lord, do I lift up my soul. Man, you could sing that wherever you are. Oh, my God, I trust in thee. Let me not be ashamed. Let not mine enemies triumph over thee. That's the first solo I've ever sung at Bob Jones University. But sing it from your heart. I'm not really expecting any applause, believe me. Okay, Dr. Cook has not asked me to be in his choir, okay? I got that. But it doesn't matter. You make a joyful what? Noise. And you sing. And your heart, you know, some of you never sing except when you're required. But God intended for us to be singing people, singing from our hearts and melody and worship to God. That's why the Psalms were written, so that we would have this experience of worshiping and encountering God. So this semester, we're not just going to study it, but hopefully we will experience it. May God bless you. Have a great day.
You've been listening to The Daily Platform. I'm Steve Pettit, president of Bob Jones University, and I invite you to join us at our beautiful campus in Greenville, South Carolina, to see how you can be prepared academically and spiritually to serve the Lord through one of our more than 100 undergraduate and graduate programs. For more information about Bob Jones University, visit www.bju.edu or call 800-252-6363.